Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Bronwyn Reed, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to come and hang with us at the Savvy Dentist Podcast. How are you, my friend? It's been a while since we've seen each other.
It actually has, and I'm fine. It's a beautiful winter's day here in central Queensland.
Lovely. Now, Bronwyn, you're really well known in the circles I operate in as someone who's a thought leader in the space of regional business, regional development. I know you've got other business interests beyond that as well, and you've got a background in finance. So I understand that everyone's life is a bit of a rich tapestry of experiences. I'm curious to ask you what your rich tapestry looks like, and how did you find your way into the work that you're doing now? And specifically, how did you find your way into the regions?
Well, for me, it's really easy, Jesse. I was brought up here. I've done full circle. I grew up as a child in central Queensland, where I am now. My parents have had agribusiness operations, and my family have had agribusiness operations in this area for a long time. So after school, boarding school, uni, and work, did the whole Brisbane-Sydney working thing, then I travelled the world for about 10 years with my husband, and who's now my business partner and husband. And we were living in Africa and got caught up in a little bit of political nastiness. So I said, I'm going home. I'm going to run home and see my mum. And we did. And we're still here.
That's great. Okay.
So we set up our business, our environmental business, which you mentioned offhandedly there. We set up our environmental business here 25 years ago.
Yeah, and again, you know, we'll talk a lot about that in a minute, but, you know, going that full circle and, you know, having that experience of, you know, school, boarding school. Actually, I went to boarding school too. And then traveling the world. I will ask you about the African experience in a minute because I didn't know that, and that's kind of piqued my curiosity because the life and times of Bronwyn sounds very exciting. But was it an easy decision to go back to what you knew, or was it just a kind of, or was there a conscious choice? Was it easy, natural fit?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
We had a very clear plan of how we wanted to bring up our children, and that involved being back here in Australia. It involved them getting to know grandma and granddad and uncles and aunties and cousins.
Yeah, okay.
We wanted to bring up our children. I always say I wanted my kids to have a totally forgettable childhood.
Okay.
No great dramas, no great ups and downs.
Yeah.
A lovely, steady life, surrounded by friends, surrounded by family, surrounded by love, and that's what we chose for our kids.
Oh, nice. Happy days. All right, so let's talk a little bit about regional lifestyle for a moment, because I know you're a passionate advocate for the regions, and I guess before we actually get into the regional lifestyle, can we define what constitutes a region? Because we had a bit of a conversation off air, and I want to get your definition of what a region is and what it may not be as well.
Very good topic, Jesse.
I feel like I've just started with a bang.
Yeah, I think you've gone down a rabbit hole there, mate.
Yeah, I reckon.
If you're a state government or a federal government, your definition of regional will be somewhere that's not Sydney, not Melbourne, but it still has a sea view.
You're right.
In other words, Wollongong, Newcastle, Gold Coast, Sunshine Coast, Rockhampton, Townsville, Cairns. But there actually is a whole heap more of Australia inland from that.
Yeah, exactly.
I do accept those coastal cities as regional, but there is an awful lot more.
Mm.
There's some really vibrant inland centres, and I definitely include those in regional.
Yeah, cool. So let's talk a little bit about regional lifestyles, regional economies, because one of the things that I must say, I'm a city slicker. It's a bit like that movie years ago with Billy Crystal. I don't know if you ever remember it, him going out into a property and having to muster cattle and do all these sorts of things. And he was a total fish out of water. And I remember actually, interestingly enough, when I was at uni, I had to do a rural placement in Roma. And you could not have picked like someone who just did not fit in. And so while I understand the attraction of the regions, I've never experienced them in the same way that you have or others. So I wanted to ask you specifically, because you're so in-depth, you know, involved in this, what is it about regions that, you know, create such a nice lifestyle? And then specifically, what is it that drives the economies of those areas that makes them sustainable and makes them really vibrant and makes them really attractive to people?
Well, Roma, that's one of my favourite regional cities. I mean, I can't understand why you didn't stay, Jesse.
Well,
seriously.
I remember we had to move cattle from one paddock to another, and I remember there was four of us, and my mate's brother was a dentist out there, and all of a sudden this bull came running towards us, and honestly, there was a moment where I might have soiled myself, and and all Michael, the owner of the property, said, just stay still, do not move. And I was standing there and I was thinking, oh my god, and this bull just around me. And honestly, I felt at that moment, I thought, okay, I'm so not cut out for this.
I just want to make one thing really, really clear here to your listeners, Jesse. If you go to a regional area, you don't have to do things with cows.
No, you don't. No.
On the whole.
No, you don't.
You don't get chased by bulls.
No, you don't. And I don't want to paint it in that way.
Let's just make that clear.
Totally. No. Regions are great. I mean, I've spent lots of time in Tamworth as well, and that's a great town as well. So anyway, so tell me, though, what is it that makes the regions sustainable? What is it that makes them vibrant? Because for those of us that are not as familiar with those areas, what is it that drives the local economy, and what does that bring to the community?
Regions are very diverse, and that's one of the attractions and also the downfalls of regional areas. Regional areas are often dominated by one industry, whether that be mining or agriculture or whatever. And in fact, often regional areas are dominated by one company.
Mm.
Mount Isa is a very good example of that. It's dominated by one company. So that gives rise to certain risk characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
So particularly in our area, I live in the middle of the Bowen Basin mining area.
Mm-hmm.
When the mining industry went into a bit of a funk back there in 2012-13, our entire regional economy got smashed.
Mm.
Now, our regional economy actually is very diverse. We have lots of agriculture, horticulture, etc. But there is that element of when the one regional industry takes a hit, it can pervade an entire regional economy. And that's why a lot of regional areas, like where I live, are spending a lot of time, a lot of money, and a lot of effort at the moment in building resilience into our regions so that we take away that dependence on one industry or one company.
Mm.
The lifestyle, I think I tried to portray that when I talked about how we wanted to bring up our children.
Mm-hmm.
It's safe where I live. My children have the only thing that I know that my children couldn't learn, or you know, all the things that you do with your kids at school, you spend your time running them around to this lesson and that lesson and soccer and everything else. The only thing that my kids couldn't do, didn't have access to, was stringed instruments. And I don't think that's such a bad thing.
Having had both my daughters do violin at a very young age, I think you probably scored very well there, Bronwyn. I can tell you that I think your school teachers in the area were thinking of the parents. Okay. So obviously that building of resilience results requires diversification. It requires looking beyond that single industry. Yeah, what is it that's bringing other industries or other businesses to those areas? Is it incentives? Is it combination of lifestyle and business incentives? What is it that's bringing or attracting people to those regions?
I think that regional Australia has an enormous, enormous chance at the moment, an enormous opportunity at the moment.
Yeah.
And the big one is clean energy.
Mm.
We have got immense opportunities. You know, we're starting to see it. We've got, at one point, we had 8 applications for solar farms around our town here.
Goodness me.
Yeah. That is going to be a big thing that attracts people to regional Australia, I think. Plus, all of the people like you in downtown Canberra who fight to, well, maybe not you particularly, but who live in a crowded suburb, drive on a crowded road to get to a crowded city office with this COVID thing, may have just discovered that that's not always necessary.
Absolutely. And one of the things, you know, I keep referring to the gift of COVID, and clearly it's had some deleterious effects, and I don't mean to be glib or make light of it, but there are some gifts that come from COVID. And one of the things is it's forced innovation. It's forced people to re-examine how they do their day-to-day things, and it's really required people to change in order to stay in business. So, yeah, you and I are talking on Zoom at the moment, and, you know, though Zoom's been around for a long time, you know, there's a whole new wave of people who are working from home and video conferencing rather than being in an office, for instance. So the opportunities to work remotely to create that opportunity, I think, are there. And it's interesting as well. You know, I was talking to my sister who lives in crowded Melbourne, and she and her friends are really, you know, having some conversation about, you know, is this really where we want to be? And maybe we might go to, in their case, a Victorian regional area and so on and so forth. So there are some really good things happening in the regions. And one of the things, again, Ron, I've observed as well, and again, you'll be able to speak to this, I imagine, is that many of my clients who work in the regions are doing very, very well economically. There seems to be, you know, perhaps it's not a universal thing, but in the regions that I'm familiar with, there seems to be some really strong economies, some really strong opportunities for growth, and therefore some wonderful commercial opportunities for the astute, you know, listener. Would you agree?
Absolutely are. You know, we've had this thing for so many years, and I don't know how. I was a part-time university lecturer for 12 years.
Oh, okay.
And we would have these, you know, meetings. And the eternal topic is, how do we attract professionals to come and live in our area, and how do we keep our young people here?
Mm.
Well, it's really interesting because that is changing. Again, it's anecdotal. I had a cup of tea this morning with a young lady who comes from Emerald. Mm-hmm. She's been at uni in Brisbane. She has a business in Brisbane. And all these other kids who've been brought up here, gone away, and then have all flocked back here during their COVID lockdown, and none of them want to leave.
Wow.
They all want to stay here because they know they value the lifestyle that's here and the comfort that's here.
Yeah.
So that whole problem of, oh, we can't attract people, it really is starting to break down. And I've been seeing it now for probably 2 years.
Mm.
And now we're starting to see stories on the ABC.
Mm.
About tree changes. Regional Development Australia released a research report mm-hmm. in the last week about millennials moving to regional areas. The sort of things that you detect it early and just see some little inklings of it, and then gradually now it's starting to turn up in news reports.
Mm.
So I think we've identified a trend.
Yeah, fantastic.
I really do.
And do you think, just out of curiosity, this may or may not be relevant, but I'm curious to ask the question nonetheless, is Australia for the last few years has had a really strong migration policy. We've been able to bring a lot of people into the country from, you know, other parts of the world. And do you think that those flocking to the regions, and I agree with you, I see people moving to the regions. Is it, dare I say, people coming in from overseas moving to the regions, or is it perhaps those that are, you know, second or third generation in Australia moving to the regions, or is it a bit of a cross-section of everyone?
Cross-section.
Yeah.
It is definitely a cross-section. I mean, obviously where I live here, we're in the middle of the mining industry, so we have, you know, everybody.
Yeah.
The world is here.
Got your own.
All the professionals. But, you know, I don't know if you watched the ABC program Backroads.
I love that show with Heather Ewart.
Yeah, well, she did the program from Billawheeler.
Okay.
Which, of course, is where that Tamil family is from.
Of course.
That there's been all that,
yeah,
you know, hoo-ha about in the media. So, yeah, it is a mixture.
Yeah. So there'll be people listening to this podcast, Ronan, saying, look, I'm actually really quite interested in, you know, seeking to leave the city, to perhaps find a region that I might like to live in. And of course, you know, I totally accept that every single area has its own unique offering. Every single area has something to offer. But in terms of things to consider when looking to move to the regions, what sort of things should people be thinking about as they go through their researching process?
It obviously depends a little bit on your family formation stage.
Sure.
But you know, I just hear so many people say, oh, you know, I wouldn't want to move out there. There's nothing there. Well, you know, there is.
Yeah.
There actually is. We have There's a vibrant arts scene here. Mm-hmm. We have a vibrant art group, a photography group. We've got every sport. We've got musical instruments except violins. We can't do violins. Well.
be grateful, Bronwyn. As I said, be grateful.
And that may have changed. My children are now in their 20s.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you have small children or if you have children, you need to look at education possibilities.
Yep.
But, you know, just because kids reach high school doesn't mean you have to – they can't go to high school here. You know, we have three high schools in our town, two private, one state, and every reasonable-sized town around here has a high school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just –
Okay.
There's so much more positives than there are negatives. I always used to joke with my friends in Brisbane. So I have a very good friend in Brisbane whose two children are exactly the same age as mine. We had our first children 2 weeks apart and our second children 4 weeks apart.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to stay with them in Brisbane, she would be doing the whole school run thing and then out and then you get the roundabout and the traffic lights and then you're here and then you can't park. And whereas with me, if I had to drive more than 5 minutes to school, it was a real bother. You know, if there was three cars on the roundabout, seriously, it's a traffic jam. You know, and how many times have your kids said, you get halfway there and, oh, Dad, oh, I forgot my tennis racket. Oh, Dad, my lunch is still on the table. Well, you just do it. You turn, you go back and get it.
Yep. Yeah, I think we had that this week, actually.
Stop. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I think you've been reading my mail there. We had that exact scenario. Dad, I forgot my lunch. All right, let's go.
It's easier to live. It is easier to live.
Okay. So, again, so if someone's sitting there thinking about, you know, moving out to the regions, you know, leaving the city, going somewhere a little more inland Australia, obviously you're going to be looking at educational possibilities. Is there a population size that you think that makes it sustainable, or is there a magic number around that, or is there not such a magic number?
No, not such a magic number, really. You know, I mean, if you had very young children that were just in, you know, preschool and primary school, you could certainly go to a much smaller town where without travelling.
Yeah,
and to high school.
And going back to that show Backroads, which really is one of my wife's and my favourite shows. Yeah, one of the things that comes up in that show is that there are some towns that, you know, really do struggle, and obviously they're a bit smaller, but how do you know whether a town is on the verge of thriving or on the verge of perhaps going into a bit of decline? What sort of things were delayed?
I guess the small towns that have been going into a decline
mm-hmm.
have been doing so for a very long time.
Yeah.
And in regional Australia, I mean, we don't do things with bullock drays anymore and, you know, horse and carts. We have cars. That will surprise some people. So the small towns that would have been 40, 45 minutes, 60 minutes apart
mm-hmm.
in the old days, because that was, you know, how you travelled, they have tended to agglomerate around a larger regional centre.
Right. So those smaller satellites are the ones that are going to be mainly affected. So
having said that, I know a small businessman who lives in my town who came out here as a miner, I believe, but he was a butcher by trade.
Mm-hmm.
So he moved to one of those small satellite towns.
Mm-hmm.
He opened up a butcher shop. He, you know, he did all the things, you know, a point of difference and all of that, and he's now opened up a butcher shop in a whole heap of the little satellite towns, as well as one in the main town where I live. So it's not prescriptive.
Okay. All right. So, okay, there's lots of things here that I think are going to pique people's curiosity. So are there any regions that are known for their growth? Are there any regions that are, you know, that you can think of by name that you kind of go, well, this particular area is a rapidly growing area, or that particular area is a rapidly growing area? Because one of the things that happens in dentistry, Bronwyn, I should mention, is that in dentistry there is at present perhaps a bit of a supply-demand, you know, challenge there, in the sense that years ago when I graduated, there certainly was, you know, an undersupply of dentists relative to the population. That pendulum has swung all the way back the other way, and then now it's probably coming not quite, certainly not quite at the center. So really, for dentists looking to relocate, they're going to be looking for an area that has growth opportunity. Can you think of any particular towns? I know you've got a breadth of knowledge around not just your region, but others as well. What areas do you think are those that are likely to be, you know, having great population growth into the future?
I'd actually be reluctant to do that, not because I don't want to pick on any region, but because my knowledge is incomplete.
Okay.
So I don't want to say anything. However, what I would suggest that anyone wanting that information do is follow Bernard Salt,
Demographer.
The demographer. He does a lot of research on, on regional economies and where the growth is and where the growth isn't.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that would be my advice.
Okay. So I think he's got a thing called the SALT report. I don't know if he still has that, but he used to have something, a report out periodically. And he had a book years ago called The Big Shift, which, again, may be out of date. But, again, he's a very, very smart and well-respected dude. So, Bronwyn, what is it you think that you wish city people knew about the regions? What are the things, if you could tap them on the shoulder and just say, hey, you probably don't realize this, but I know it's not just about the traffic and the ease of living, but what are the other things that genuinely, you know, you think that city people may not be aware of that you think they ought to be aware of?
First thing I'm going to say is that, and this sounds a bit tongue-in-cheek, but it actually is real. First thing I would like to say is that just because you move to a regional area doesn't mean that your IQ automatically drops about 20 points and all degrees and qualifications that you've ever had all automatically disappear, and that you start wearing a big hat and you get chased by bulls.
What prompted this?
He says,
"Yeah, because that is something that would never have occurred to me. If I, you know, now that I've asked you that question, that is a response that I would go, wow, that's not the response I expected. So obviously there's something that's influencing you, your response in that regard. So I'm curious to ask, why would you think that people think that?
Because that is how you often get received. You know, I speak at conferences in Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne. I did a blog post about this not so long ago that did very well. I work with a group here that's setting up an agri-tech hub. And this is the first, you know, ag tech innovation incubator in Australia. So, you know, we have one of the world's leading ag tech robotics companies, not 30 minutes from where I'm sitting now. But when we try, you know, if we go to Canberra, if we go to Brisbane, it's not so bad because we're kind of closer to them, but it's like we've landed in from some other planet. Or
really?
Some sort of parallel universe. Yes, it is true.
Mm.
And as my friend Liz Alexander, who's working, one of the ones working on this ag tech incubator, said, you first got to prove you're not stupid before you can pitch.
Wow.
So, yeah, it really is. That's the first thing I wish they would know.
Well, that saddens me that that's your experience because, I went to boarding school and I know you went to boarding school too. And, you know, we were surrounded by kids from the country, you know, and not just, you know, larger towns, but I'm talking some far-flung places. And I learned more from those kids than I could ever describe. They absolutely have shaped my worldview, and they've totally, over the years, broadened my horizons and my perspective. And so I'm really sad and disappointed that, I mean this in a good way. I'm sad and disappointed you felt that was something that we needed to know because obviously that's your experience, but it just wouldn't occur to me that that's a thing.
I'll tell you a story. Last year I attended a course in Sydney and I paid a lot of money to attend this course and we were pitching, you know, doing our pitch.
Mm.
And I was doing my regional pitch, the stuff that I've talked to you about, you know, I'm from regional areas, regional small business, blah, blah, blah. And the person looked at me and said, oh, yes, it's very important that we support the bush. Now, that was her entire impression of regional Australia, was that we must support the poor people in the bush. Yes, I know we've had droughts and I know we've had floods and I know we have fires, but we're not all sitting out here in regional Australia waiting for a handout.
Oh, God, no.
And, you know, in drought waiting for a handout. And unfortunately, that is the image that is too often portrayed, and it's portrayed by our media.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. That's, as I said, that's a fascinating topic. I'm sure we can delve into that another time. But in terms of other things that you'd like the city folk to understand, if you, again, things that they might not necessarily appreciate or understand now, but what are the things you'd like to go, you know what, you probably need to think about XYZ, or you probably need to understand this. What else do you think city folk could do with understanding?
I did allude to it before when I was talking about, you know, music and sport. It is all here. You don't have to miss out just because you're living in a regional area.
Mm. It's not a second-rate choice is what you're saying.
No, it is not a second-rate choice.
Mm. It can be, for many people, it's the best choice they'll ever make.
Exactly. And it doesn't stop you becoming a sporting star. You know,
no.
Let's just start counting out how many football players and cyclists and whatever come from regional areas.
Yep.
It doesn't stop you mm-hmm. being a star. The sense of community is always going to be greater.
Mm.
I know you might live in a really friendly cul-de-sac in Canberra, but for an entire community and an entire community of support, I have not seen that in a capital city or even in a large city.
Okay.
I always joke that my children were free range and that if they grew up to be, you know, murderers or whatever, that I could blame the neighbours because they effectively brought them up, not me. I was running a business at the time. There is a wonderful security. It is almost indescribable that this is a place, and it speaks to the Aboriginal, our First Nations people, talking about a sense of place, that the children grow up with a sense of place.
Mm.
And I spoke about it just a while ago. You know, all the uni kids that have had to come home because the unis are shut, they don't want to go back. You know, they're comfortable. They love their life. So if I could portray that as a living as a collective, not as a lone family unit. I know that sounds a bit fuzzy. No,
I don't think it does. And I think, you know, again, one of the things that we all talk about in the work that we do, of course, is that there's something that's deep-seated about connection. And I think as human beings, connection gives meaning and purpose to our lives. And, you know, if that's going to be a bigger feature of life in regions than it is in the city, then obviously that's going to add enrichment to the lives of those involved. And so certainly there's a lot of good things there. So, Ron, we have covered a bit of territory. We've been uphill and down dale this afternoon. And firstly, thank you so much for your time this afternoon and for your generosity and your wisdom. Ladies and gents, if you've been listening to this podcast and you're thinking, wow, this sounds like something I'd like to explore, where do you think people should go to first, Bronwyn? I know that they can go to your website and they can download your audiobook, which is going to be a fantastic resource. And that book, of course, is called Small Company, Big Business, and it's an Audible audiobook now. And you're working on a second book, actually, How Not to Be a Rabbit in the Headlights. So when's that due out and when can people get hold of that?
It is due out in August, but I'm going to say that a little bit cautiously. COVID-19 has played havoc with all sorts of things in our lives. So it is about, I originally termed it as a survival guide for small businesses in the wake of an economic downturn, which sounds a bit textbooky, but it's around that.
Okay.
And it's not just about COVID-19 either.
No. Crises come and go, right?
They absolutely do. And I was speaking with a mutual friend of ours this morning, and I had said, you know, the first boom and bust that I went through was 1987, the 1987 share market bust.
Yep.
But it wasn't, you know. My parents went through a bust when we were kids living on the property during a drought.
Actually, this is probably opening up a new thread of conversation, but I want to ask you this. You know, what do you see as the common themes from that drought to the 1987 to the GFC to now? What do you see as those themes? Because I'm sure this is going to come through in your book. What can people read about in themes?
The whole first section of my book is the building resilience piece, which is all the stuff I'm working on with regional Australia.
Nice.
The shape of economic booms and busts is always the same.
Mm.
Droughts, fires, floods, a little bit different, but the aftermath is always the same. But an economic bust always has the same shape, and it has the same psychological stages as the boom progresses. It gets to the top. We never know what is going to trigger it at the top. This time it was a coronavirus. Who knew?
Yeah.
Then we go into a deep decline, and then we get into the despair phase, and we have been in the despair phase for the last 3 months.
Yeah.
And now we're starting to come out of the despair phase. So those stages and the psychological states of being are always the same.
Very, very predictable. And we were talking off air, actually, that I was mentioning to you that some of my clients who are a little bit older, you kind of have gone, okay, here we go again. Yeah, I've seen this before, because history may not repeat, but it rhymes, I think is the Mark Twain quote. But for the people who are experiencing for the first time, there's a case of, as you'd say, rabbit in the headlights.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's about building the resilience within that business too, I'm sure.
Well, you know, there's a whole generation of business owners and entrepreneurs in this country who have never, ever experienced anything other than buoyant trading conditions. Yes, we had a GFC, but it wasn't nearly here as like it was in other countries. So, you know, a whole generation of entrepreneurs who've never experienced a downturn, and now we have one.
We do, and it's going to be a fascinating period of time ahead, and I'm hoping we can come back and talk about that when your book is launched in August. Good luck with that. Ladies and gents, if you want to get a copy of Bronwyn's books, please do head across to, you can either get a print copy at her website, which is bronwynreid.com.au, or you can head across to Audible. I'm assuming the audiobook's going to be on Audible.
I believe it's on Audible, but I also have a link on my website.
All right, so head to the website, and the book is Small Company, Big Business. And, of course, the second book due out very shortly is going to be How Not to Be a Rabbit in the Headlights. I think that's going to be a fascinating read. I can't wait to hear it and read it. But, Bronwyn, once again, I really appreciate you taking the time today, because so many good insights, so many threads of conversation, so many things that are really useful and practical. And, again, from someone who you know, I've known for a number of years now, I know that not only do you provide great mentorship, you're doing the things on a day-to-day basis, running a real business, you know, doing all the things that, you know, smart, intelligent entrepreneurs do. So once again, mate, I salute you. Well done.
It's been great having a chat with you, Jesse.
Thanks so much, Bronwyn. I'll talk soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/savvydentist.